Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
That's what it's really about. Easy, that's what it's really about. Really about.
Brings good times, room hums company.
Good times,
room hums company. Good
times, room hums company.
Santa Barbara, it's your chantress of everything valuable and beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. You know, I always love the talent that comes out of Ojai. It just blows me away, and I don't know what it is. There's something in the water or some, I mean, these people in Ojai, they're creative individuals. They keep on being creative. They're lifelong creatives, as a matter of fact. And I always, you know, for the two sizes, I mean, Richard and I cover Goleta and Montecito and Carpentry and Ventura and, but Ojai always has people that call me or text me out of the clear blue and say, oh, by the way, we're doing this show and a bunch of us are doing, and there's always something going on in Ojai. I just love it. One of my favorite places is the Ojai Art Center Theater. It is the oldest theater in California. It opened its door in 1939. It was a purpose-built performance space. It wasn't just, you know, a school auditorium. It was a real theater from the get-go. And then, you know, it's had many, many things pass through its door. But the whole thing is it's always part of the regional theater movements that have always sprung up and so been so successful in Ojai. Every time I've been to the theater, it's always packed. So it's quite amazing. And still the mood is to support and generate the arts there. And, I mean, Ojai Art Center Theater is a whole different thing because there's a lot of different things going on in the same building. There's theater, there's music, dance, there's the visual arts. And I think in total, 8 branches. There's film, there's literary branch, there's a photography and a youth branch. And then I think it would be really cool if you have never been to the space to just go and see the space and just take a look at all the opportunities. But today we're going to talk about what's happening there. And it is a musical that I've always loved, especially The Ladies Who Lunch. My favorite. It's Company. And it is playing at the Ojai Art Center Theater from June 12th to July 12th. So let everybody get your pencils out. It's Friday and Saturday at 7:30 p.m. Sundays at 2. Tickets. Okay, remember this. It's ojaiact.org. And you can actually call the box office to 805-640-8797. And by the way, if you go... I learned last time I went to the theater, there's parking for $5 across the street. So it's really, and there's a couple of restaurants, there's like 3 that are right around the Art Center Theater. They're all fantastic. They're all fun. They all fill up before the theater. and they people come for drinks afterwards. It's an evening. So think about that. Today I have David Henderson, who's directing Company, and I was sort of gobsmacked with his bio. Here again, people end up in Ojai, or they not end up, but they happen to be living in Ojai, and they come from, I don't know, incredible backgrounds, incredible from some of the big, what we call the big cities, like New York, for example, in David's case. Upstate New York to Ojai, he has from the get-go been hanging around and doing what he can for the Ojai Arts Center Theater and other theaters in Ojai and Ventura County. He was artistic director of Method Machine, which I heard of years ago, an art and performance company, co-founder of the Rochester Fringe Festival. Okay, and what really blows me away is that my least, okay, so David, I was in ballet for almost 30 years. So the job that I never wanted to do, even in the smaller ballet companies, you're going to laugh, but I never, never, ever wanted to be house manager. And when I was a junior hoofer in Pittsburgh Ballet Theater, I was apprenticed to the house manager because we all had to do something. And it was in the days when people stood outside under the marquee and smoked their heads off. And so, you know, it would be like, okay, Elizabeth, go clean up the cigarette butts. You're house manager. And so they'd send me out there. And then, oh, the toilet paper is lacking in stall three. All these things that I got to experience being a junior house manager. So when I read David was a house manager, that takes a lot of cojones, and it takes a lot of skill and people skills. I can tell you David, we had this one house manager named Rue after the, I guess it Winnie and the Pooh Rue. And so he was Rue, and Rue had, I think he had permanent headset. I never saw him without his headset, never, even in, you know, like he'd take a pee break or he'd take a lunch break. He'd have his headset on. And he knew exactly, because he was a house manager for a ballet for many years. He knew when to duck. You know, when to get out of the wings.
Yep.
He knew all of the, and it was like magic. And he was never drunk. Everybody else was. And, you know, all the people in the rafters and all, they were always drunk. But Rue was never drunk. He's my favorite house manager. David was house manager for the producers, for Jersey Boys, for Sweeney Todd. He managed the Phantom of the Opera. And then also Sideman, and he was assistant director for the West End premiere of, how do you pronounce that? Is W?
Wit.
Of Wit. Okay.
Like they're very witty.
Okay. Ventura County directed Beyond Therapy, A Year of Magical Thinking, the Thanksgiving play Dear, New Century, Red. I saw Red. I loved it. There was one young talented actor there I wanted to take home.
Remy.
Sexy, interesting.
The
totally.
Young guy, yeah. I'm blanking on his last name right now, but Remy was wonderful to work with.
And, you know, and like, where did that talent come from? I was so impressed. It was like, whoa, you know, just an amazing.
Yeah, he was from LA that our co-director knew that actor from before.
Okay. And then Be Careful What You Wish For, that was a while ago, wasn't that?
Yeah, that was one of the first shows I worked on with Isabel Roth. It was a one-woman narrative piece. It was, we did it in the gallery at the Art Center.
Okay, really, so it's David Henderson. And like I say, he's directing a Sondheim show. And so I want us to talk a little bit about the show itself, Company, and the American musical theater world at the time when Sondheim made Company. We say made, that's not the right word in theater. It's in ballet. You make a ballet on a company.
He wrote this musical. He composed, he wrote the lyrics. The book was written by George Firth and started as 11 separate one acts.
So Bobby interacts with girlfriends and married friends. It's around a birthday party, if I remember.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So what was going on? What was the impetus?
This musical premiered in 1971, and it originated out of 11 one-act plays written by George Firth. They were supposed to go to Broadway, but the production got canceled. And so then Hal Prince and Stephen Sondheim and George Firth got together, and they decided to turn it into this musical. But because of the way that the plays were written, they were all very, they were individual one acts, so that the concept of the musical became not about so much Bobby going from beginning to end, knowing all these people, but Bobby reviewing his life at the moment through these interactions with other couples who've been married, who are getting divorced, who are getting married, and then three girlfriends. And so he gets to experience all levels of relationships, trying as he's single, he's turning 35, which back then was a bigger thing, I think, than it is now. But you know, finding love and finding relationships and developing company is universal and still really important today.
Okay. Well, so, I want to ask you, who do you identify with in the show?
Well, I am single. I'm not 35. but definitely Bobby, but you know, I'm also divorced, so I identify with the divorcees, and I've, you know, been getting married. There's a little bit of everybody in this script and in this show that I identify with, but I would say the most Bobby, you know, for very obvious sort of reasons. But
so how does, okay, so David, you've directed shows that are not musicals, mm-hmm. and shows that are not buoyant. Mm-hmm. You know, for example, I saw two of the shows you directed so far in my life. And I want to know what it's like to do a Sondheim for you and to, you know, come into this world of, I mean, real full bore, full throated American musical theater.
I do not shy away from the big stuff. I love tackling big projects, whether it's Angels in America or, you know, a site-specific project that included 175 actors. I find the project to be the challenge and also the scope of it. You know, and then for Sondheim, actually, you know, I watched Sweeney Todd, gosh, I don't know how many times, and I got to observe on the company production from 2006, the revival directed by John Doyle that featured actors that played. They were the orchestra. Joanne, what did Joanne play? Did she play the French horn? Or no, that was April.
Saxophone,
I think. They all played different instrument. So I got to observe that one. And that's really when I fell in love with Company. And that was in 2006. So it's been on my radar for a long time. Not only that, I like non-traditional stuff. And this play is, you know, it was the first concept, what they call the first concept musical. And the fact that there was no linear plot, things didn't happen in order like Oklahoma. So that was also something that really, you know, spoke to me, this idea it was experimental at the time. You know, it was not something that had been tried with much success.
So tell me to go another direction, but I'm interested to know, was there a relationship that brought you from New York to California?
Yeah, a really good friend of mine that I grew up with, a very good family friend who works in the area. And I had been, you know, I lived in Rochester in the Northeast for 45 years, and it only took me that long to decide that I wanted to be in sunnier, warmer weather. So I sort of started shopping around, and I came out here and visited and got involved and decided this is where I was going to put down some roots. So this is okay. My third year here permanently.
Okay. My God, you've done a lot in 3 years.
Yeah, I don't like to sit around. Although the next couple of months, I'm going to sit around for a little bit.
What I was driving at was I was getting a sense that there was some sort of relationship that maybe brought you here, that at the core of your experience in directing company, there's a deep resonance with the various types of relationships in the show, so that you definitely can understand what's going on in the show because many things happen to you, i.e. you're a divorced man, you've had relationships, et cetera. You moved across coasts for a good friend, et cetera. So, you know, this idea of company, you know, I imagine you selected the play, right?
It was with Tracy Sutton, who is the artistic director. And we had tossed around a couple different shows. One of the other ones was My Fair Lady, but it wasn't going to be your traditional production of My Fair Lady if I was going to direct it. Believe it or not, the rights weren't available for My Fair Lady. So
what?
It must be on tour or something. I'm not sure. But this was on my list of things I wanted to do. And she said, let's do it. And I said, absolutely. And in terms of Ojai, you know, part of being new to this is finding new friendships and finding company to be with. And I have found that through theater, and I have found that through the show as well. And so that, to me, that has been an important message of the show, is making friends, keeping friends, working together, and maybe finding relationships. Who knows? We'll see.
I want to also now introduce Laura Ring, who's standing by here, and she is playing Joanne in the show, iconically sarcastic and bitingly truthful human in the show. And so Laura has done many diverse roles, middle-aged romantic lead in Ida, in the Cemetery Club. She's played Frau Buchler, the one with the, always have the horse's neigh when they say the name, in Mel Brooks' Young Frankenstein. She's been a Puritan in The Crucible, and she's been King Arthur's horse?
Oh, Spamalot. Patsy.
And Spamalot. Okay. Fantastic. I know. Laura's here, and
someone's in the waiting room.
I want to know when the notes that I was sent by your press agent tells me ironically sarcastic. Tell me more.
Her take on life is sarcastic and biting and straightforward, whether or not she's speaking of her husband or herself.
And do you identify with that? Is that something that you bring home?
I think she's a bit more biting than I am, but sure, I have some sarcastic wit. Yeah, I can throw some zingers in there, but yes.
What do you think of David as a director?
Oh. Cool. How's that for one word? Cool. We get along. He's able to ask me to do something and I try it. And he either says, yep, head in that way, or try this. I think
I ask that because You know, as I think you heard at the beginning, so my background is in classical ballet. And so I danced in what they call Balanchine companies. So it was all Balanchine based, you know, highly structured. And our directors were iconoclasts. I think that's the word. In other words, you could not suggest, and dare you suggest, you were out. And so there was no suggestions. You didn't even, you could listen during notes, but you couldn't talk. And, you know, I when I see young directors direct today, it's like you actually listen to your actors. That's so, I mean, it's not a world that I was trained in at all, but I think it's amazing. But, you know, I wonder how much, you know, a certain director like David, for example, how much he relies on his actors to bring him nuances, or maybe he doesn't. You know, since I have one of you that's with us who is being directed by David, does he allow for much leeway?
Oh, absolutely. Yes. And then if I take Joanne in a different direction, he'll suggest another way, or ask me to do less, or, you know, cut the accent or whatever. And because I'm pretty pliable as an actor, I'll do it. If somebody asks me to, you know, make a right hand turn, well, metaphorically, then I do. I try it.
So, okay. So talk to me about, now that here again, this is my own background. Talk to me about David's style of movement. How does
can
he
I interrupt for yeah. one second?
Yeah, certainly
I know,
can.
Know if Richard saw, but Emily was. Oh, you didn't.
Okay, Emily's waiting.
She.
Okay. We're going to go to quick break in 2 seconds, but I want to just get back to one thing. I wanted to know David's take on movement, on theatrical movement in his directing style. So I have, my sister's a SAG actor in New York. And my sister said when she got very, very sick that her director actually came to her apartment and she was floored by that. She was like, he never even noticed I was alive until I started to die. And then he came to my apartment. And I wanted to know how David directs movement.
You mean movement as in dance type movement, choreography movement, or movement as the actor walking on? Oops.
No, that's okay. That's a movement as the actor, Joanne.
Keeping it very natural, very real. This is a realistic piece. It's not
Got it.
A period piece. So if you are, for me, example, if I am big and, put on, he would ask me to be more realistic in my movement.
Got it. Okay. That is so interesting. So this is not a period. It is not the importance of being earnest where everybody's straight up. It's a today show. It's meant to be today. Yeah.
It is. And the movement. It's yeah. contemporary. You know, it was written in 71 and some productions keep it in 71. I wanted to go much more contemporary. So that leads to, you know, more contemporary movement. And one of the other things that we talked about, I remember one day in rehearsal, we were talking about characters. And what I said was that, you know, these aren't stock characters. This isn't the funny man, and this isn't the ingenue. That I cast these people because they reminded me of these characters, and that these characters are in them, and they don't have to force it.
I see.
That they really could just sort of take an easier time with it, and not really push the characterization and the eccentricities of these characters, and that they would just naturally come out.
That is so interesting that you cast with that in mind, mm-hmm. that what little capsule of this character that's mm-hmm. in the play mm-hmm. is in this auditionee.
Absolutely.
What, where is that coming from in that auditionee? That is so interesting. I don't think I've ever heard that before.
I mean, that's, you know, I don't know how else to do it because, you know, the actor can make up all sorts of character stuff about them, but it's all going to come from their inside based on their experience. So I try to and feel like I do. That's what I see when I audition for any show.
That is really interesting. I don't think Richard and I have been doing this show for 20 years every Friday, and I don't think a director's ever said that. I think that's very interesting. You know, let's go to quick break because Emily Redmond Hall is waiting in the wings, another member of the production, and Emily plays David, and they are going to join us in a few seconds when we get back from the break. And I just want to reintroduce, so everybody gets a chance to take out their pencils and write down how they're going to get tickets. This is the Stephen Sondheim show that if you haven't seen Company, you will have heard some of the songs. And my favorite is The Ladies Who Lunch. And I love that song. I just adore that song. And that's kind of brings you into the play. If you haven't been sitting in an audience seeing the play Company, you will love it. And it is playing at the Ojai Arts Center Theater June 12th to July 12th. And it's Friday and Saturday nights and Sundays matinee. And the box office is Ojai, O-J-A-I at A-C-T .org. And you can call and get your tickets. They're reasonable. And make a night of it. If you're from Santa Barbara, parking is $5 across the street. There's some great restaurants right around there. And the audience at the Ojai Arts Center Theater is a trip. They're unique. And I love them, and I love what comes out of Ojai. We get back from the break, we're going to bring another performer on to talk about their experience with the show. Hey, Richard, let's go to quick break. We get back from the break, let's introduce Emily. It's Emily Redmond Hall. Okay, don't turn that down. Back in a minute.
Now what? I could have prevented that.
How?
By blocking.
Oh, that can't be blocked.
Oh, I certainly can. I just didn't do it.
Anyway, Robert, that can't be blocked.
I'm going to come at you again.
Wait, no. Wait. Okay. I figured it out. Let's do it again.
Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. We're celebrating Ojai Arts Center Theater's production of Company, and I've got the star of the show who is in his car waiting to go back to work. He's going to give us 2 seconds of his time, and this is the man who plays Bobby, and his name
is
Kyle Caldwell, Actors Equity Association and SAG-AFTRA member. He's an active digital creator. He's done a lot of really interesting past roles, Jamie in the last 5 years, Seymour in Little Shop of Horrors, Robbie Hart in The Wedding Singer, The Baron in The Grand Hotel, et cetera. And I was previewing some of the songs that your press agent sent me last night, and you have a magnificent voice. And it's just a fantastic honor to introduce you. Just very quickly.
Thank you so much.
Who's Bobby to you, Kyle?
Bobby to me, ironically enough, is me in my early 20s, even though he's technically in his mid-30s during the time of the show. It's the most relatable time to me because when I was in my mid-30s, I was married and still am to a beautiful woman named Darian Lissette by her stage name. She is also in the show. When I was in my 20s, I was always kind of the third wheel surrounded by a bunch of very happy couples, whether they were married or they were just in a long-term relationship at the time. They really did kind of feel like, well, we're so happy, we have to make sure that we set up our best friend with that same kind of happiness.
I hate that.
Yes. And the problem is their idea of quote unquote happiness doesn't necessarily fit what I deem to be happiness. I currently am happy in my situation, and they just don't necessarily really bother to check that out. So that's kind of what Bobby means to me on a personal level. From a professional level, I have been waiting basically almost 20 years in order to play this role because it's been such an inspiration to me to play such a vulnerable, flawed character with the work of Stephen Sondheim kind of backing it up. I just needed to put some gray in my beard and, get that life experience to like truly know what he's thinking and what he's feeling. Even though I do relate him to my 20s, you know, there's still like a lot of life experience needed to truly understand the complexities of Bobby, especially because we're dealing with the need for connection that he believes he's going to find in marriage. I personally think that the best part about this show, especially with it being vignettes, and instead of not necessarily like a linear timeline, is that it opens up a dialogue more of, what people truly can take away from this experience, talk about like their own relationships, talk about Bobby's relationship with everybody else. And it's just a beautiful piece of art that I think that everybody deserves the opportunity to see. Because, you know, at the end of the day, we're talking Sondheim.
That's right. End of the day, we're talking Sondheim. Just very quickly, before we let you go, what's it like to work on stage with your wife?
Well, it's not the first time. We actually met doing a show. And it's oddly enough, my wife played my mother.
Okay, Oedipus.
Exactly. That's why I think it's so hilarious. Two theaters with an Oedipus complex to come together in holy matrimony. We've also done work romantically in my second time playing the last 5 years, but we only really crossed paths at the end of the first act or just like in the middle of the show, depending on how you decide to break it down. So we never really had an opportunity to be so intimate on stage together. But the interesting thing for me is having her work as musical director and being on that side of it, because she's always kind of helped me out as like a vocal coach, because she's an amazing singer and she gives me tips here and there. But I've never felt the responsibility of making sure that I made her look good. That's the truly interesting dynamic of working with my wife this time around. But she's brilliant in her roles. Everybody's brilliant in their roles. I couldn't ask for a better cast, better director to do this bucket list show. And I hope everybody can see it. And I would love to discuss this further at Curtain Call.
Yes, definitely. So there will be some talks too after the show. So that's another perk with the Ojai Art Center Theater. Okay, Kyle, thank you for jumping in, and we'll let you get back to work. I appreciate it very much. And
thank you guys so much.
told me one question that I wanted to ask you was, what's it like to work with David Henderson? And you already said everything that I needed to know to answer that question, that you love it. So I understand, and I thankfully, and I'll see you on stage. Can't wait. Thank Perfect. You. Thanks,
Kyle. I definitely would much rather be there than, not going to lie, but all right, thank you for having me. And sure, we'll see bye. You at the show. Bye.
So Emily Redmond Hall is here, an Ojai native. They perform and teach and coach music, and they have worked in theaters across Ventura County in Los Angeles. They're an alumni of the Classical Voice Program at the University of Redlands. They're the director of Ojai's Madrigal Chorus. I'm saying that wrong. Madrigali Chorus.
Yeah, Madrigali.
Madrigali Chorus. And you play David.
Yeah.
And tell me about that role.
So, I appreciate David, the director, for giving me an opportunity. It's not the first time I've had the opportunity to play a man, but it's always fun because I'm a person who thinks about gender a lot. Obviously, I'm non-binary, so like my perception of gender and the way that I present my gender to the world is something that's constantly going through my head. So it's always fun in a theatrical space to think about how is my voice and my body and my mannerisms and the relationships that I'm creating with other people, how is this all fitting into this narrative? And company is gender show, you know. Mm-hmm. You can do it with the gender swapped characters, but I think it is important when Bobby is a man that Bobby is a man. And I think it's important that he has his male friends and his female friends, and they are very different relationships that he has with the husbands than with the wives. And we see so many like really, really stereotypical gender dichotomies play out between those groups. You know, the guys are like, man, I'm so jealous of you. You get to go out and, you know, hook up with all these ladies. And then
let's find you a girl. I've got a girl.
Yeah. So it's really fun. I often love playing characters who are very different from myself. I thought that David was going to be a lot more different than myself than he ended up being. I think I found parts of him that I really clicked with, and I settled into playing certain aspects of that character. But there's also definitely a lot of toxicity in that character with his relationship with his wife, Jenny, who is played by my dear friend, Kelly, who's not here right now, but yeah.
Okay, so I really get a really interesting take on this, because we're talking about, you know, the play instigated the date of creation in the very early 70s. Sondheim's writing it. As David mentioned, some productions take us back to 1971. Mm-hmm. And what Emily Redmond Hall is telling us is that there's, what did you say, a highly gendered show. And within that capacity, there's some toxicity. And, you know, Emily themselves plays a male character. And she was telling us there, they were telling us right now about the stereotypical roles of the husbands and the wives. And, you know, you're single and you're really lucky you get to bed these women, da, 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 da. And that was an era that was then and this is now. And that was at the bottom of my list to see if I could actually go there with this director and with his cast to ask about that. It's very different. I was alive in 1971, just barely, of course. But, you know, it is a different world. Do you ever, Emily, get like, okay, roll your eyes at this? It's like, what, you seem like you're younger, and it's like, well, how did this world actually turn on its axis this way? You know, the play is, as you say, highly gendered. Do you ever get insulted? Do you ever like get put out by it? Do you understand what that era was? Or do you think, oh, I'm so glad that I don't live at that time? I mean, tell me your thoughts.
I think in order to have an opinion about something, you have to understand it. And I of course, do a lot of research into like the way that gender and sexuality has existed throughout different periods of the 20th century. And this is such an, like, right at 1970, early 70s, such an interesting time because we're coming out of the 60s, which was extremely regimented, gendered, like women were in the kitchen, men were at work, and that was that. But then in the 70s, you have the sexual revolution coming about. And so I think this piece lands in such a fascinating time where we see that that is changing. And this must have felt very, I think, radical to the people in the first audiences. Maybe not in the theater, because that has always been a place where you are allowed to talk about taboo subjects. But for the general public, I think probably they were like, oh, this is going in some interesting places. And of course, nowadays, you know, 50 years later, 55 years later, we look back at this and we say, well, of course, you know, there's been tons of works exploring these relationships since then. And we do live in such a different world. But I don't roll my eyes at it. I am grateful for the progress that we've made. And that's sort of the relationship I have with it. But yeah, I am one of the younger members in the cast by quite a bit.
Okay, so that is super interesting. So the stereotypical, David, this is a question for the director. So you're navigating this territory, and you're directing the show in a certain way. Do you feel that some lines that were originally written sound different to you? Do you direct them differently than, say, hypothetically, you would have had you been 35 years old in 1971?
Sure. There's a few lines in there that have made me roll my eyes every once in a while. But the way we looked at that as much as possible was more as a commentary rather than a characterization necessarily. We know these characters, I like this, and they said these things, but we're looking at it through a different lens now. Also, there's a lot that hasn't changed, you know, just because it's changed for many people, it is still the status quo for a huge part of our community and our country. So it's an interesting mix of showing progress, and not only that, but making our own progress within the show, and juxtaposed against what may not be progress.
Exactly. I'm thinking to myself, so I remember I was in grade school, and right around the time that Sondheim was writing this show, and my best friend and I, we were going to do a newsletter. I think that we had this big idea. And so we asked all of our classmates, I don't know how old we were, we asked all of our classmates for what they were going to do as a profession. And my best friend wanted to be an actor. But in those days, you didn't say actor, you said actress. And then some of the people that we interviewed, it was very gendered at that time. I said, I would like to be a dentist. And the teacher that was in charge of our newsletter said, you can't be doing that. You have to be the hygienist. And so it was like, okay, so I want to be a hygienist. My dad was a dentist. He was a male, so he could be a dentist, but I had to be a hygienist. You know, and that was the time. So when you say you're taking the lines and you're not making a characterization, but you're actually making an event out of that. I think that's fantastic because, yeah, I mean, when you say let's go make America great again and go back to that, I don't think I'll ever be happy being a hygienist. not a dentist.
No. And nor should you don't need to be happy being a hygienist and that.
Nothing against hygienists. I just
that to me is what makes America already great.
Yeah, right. And to go backwards is but basically that totally you have to have lived that a couple of times to where if you were a certain gender that there's certain things that were not open to you, and totally happened when Sondheim was writing this show. I can tell you that much. I was a kid, but I could see it. So that was interesting that Emily brought this up. That as a younger binary person in the company, that she finds this a gendered show in a way that maybe some of your audience is going to be like, oh, I remember that. Ha ha ha. Well, there was some rough bits, as you get turned, you got to, rough bits. Like, for example, when my parents divorced, my mother got told off for leaving the Christmas decorations out too long on the house because she didn't have a husband to take care of the Christmas decoration, get up on that ladder. She couldn't, because no one wants to see underneath her skirt up there on that ladder. And all these sorts of things were being told, around the neighborhood. It happened. It really happened. Yeah. And so it's so interesting, David, that you're navigating this way. It's not typology. Yeah. It's a historical look. I love it.
Yeah. No, we talked about setting it in the 70s, but it just, I don't know, it felt too historical to do it that way and not a reflection of our current community. It just didn't seem like the right choice.
It's not only am I grateful for that decision, but I'm grateful because when I come and see the show, I don't have to look at the fashions we wore in 1970. Oh, this was a fashion face plant.
Yeah.
As far as the fashion is concerned. And I'm so surprised, I'm a person that is very keyed into, the visual world. Because I'm an appraiser. I look at art. I look at decor. I look at all that, for 30 years of my career. And I'm very, very cognizant of what we call material culture of the era. So, there's a certain line and color and shape to an era that's easily identifiable in the art. That was what my doctoral work was all about, was the material culture being the first source material for art historians. And it's so interesting to me that the early 70s it had none of the flavor of the late 60s. Where you had the really interesting costumes and very forward thinking, it was actually more forward thinking than the 70s insofar as the nudity, the allowance of nudity, allowance of gender fluidity. Then we got the 70s, and then we had sort of this clampdown. I think the reason being is because there was so much what they called white flight at the time, David, going to these suburbs, that's where I grew up. And there was no counter anything in those suburbs. And that brought me to my last question in this interview, which is, how do you see the environment of the show? Where do they live? Where does the show live?
They live in New York City. It's generally set on the Upper West Side, but we didn't get that specific. The only specific choice we made was to celebrate his birthday on the rooftop of his apartment building, which just sort of gave it a fresh and very modern, you didn't really have birthday parties on your rooftop in the 70s unless it was all out of, styrofoam coolers. But, we brought it up a little bit more. We've got some cafe, string lights. It is, you know, it looks like a rooftop. But also within that, it has to serve as a setting for living rooms, kitchens, bedrooms. So all of this show is nonlinear from some of the music to the story, you know, to the set and the lighting and everything. We wanted to make it fresh and give it a very specific location in terms of the way it's it's the way it's formed as a whole.
Okay, so I'm so glad for this discussion because I think it gives us a real insight about what we're going to see mm-hmm. and what the mindset of the director has been on the progress on a very famous one of the most famous Sondheim musicals ever. Okay. And then so interesting, Emily Redmond Hall came and told us that, you know, this was a real interesting role for her to play David for a lot of different reasons, and how she looks back on the era of the time of when the show was written vis-a-vis the time it's now being produced. And it was great to speak to Laura Ring about the idea of how what I called was that when David was casting, saw in Laura her character Joanne somehow, that the what do you call it, the egg, the sort of the
impetus,
molecule that was going to turn into Joanne in a different way than I've ever really heard a director say that before. It was super cool to hear Laura talk about how before Emily Redmond Hall got on, Laura was talking about David as a director. And of course, she's been in the theater for many years. So she's talking about David as a director, and how the one word she could think of was cool. And I think that's very, very cool in itself. Just another shout out. This is Company, and it is a Sondheim Prince production that is being directed by David Henderson. And if you haven't seen a work by David, you're in for a treat. I've seen two, and he's only been here, 7 years?
No, not even. I've been coming here about 5 years since the pandemic. My first year here was in March of the pandemic.
Okay. But yeah. He's directed a lot across, I think, the Tri-Counties at this point, and this is now a production that he's directing at Ojai Art Center Theater. And the show is only really going to run for a month. And so you really have to get your skates on. It's running June 12th through July 12th. And so far it's been going very well, I understand, from the box office.
Yeah, we're getting big reviews. Yeah,
good
also,
reviews.
On Saturday, we have a program called Pay What You Can, and we'll be offering that at the door, cash only. And it's just a really great way to reach out to the community and offer, access to, to offer access to people who may not be able to usually afford theater. And so we're doing this Pay What You Can program on this Saturday.
Okay. Tickets are available, but you better run fast. They had a couple of sold out nights already that, when I called for tickets, you want to go ojaiohiact.org, or you can call, it's 805-640-8797, and call the theater and find out what's available. And like we were hearing from David, the Pay What You Can is this Saturday. And then don't you have a special evening when the actors can speak?
This we haven't set up anything for that yet. But okay. If we do, we will let you know.
Okay, please. And I'd like to announce that. Mm-hmm. I know Kyle was mentioning maybe he would be willing to do that just quickly on our interview today. So thank you all, David Henderson, and fantastic to see Yeah, I saw Reds and I fell in love with your directing style, by the way. So David Henderson, Kyle Caldwell has spoken to us. He's Bobby, the lead in this particular show. And we talked also with Laura Ring. She's playing Joanne, and I can't wait to see her performance. Emily Redmond Hall comes from a long, long line of musical people. And she actually is playing David in the show. And thank you all for being with us. And I say that's fantastic. And I can't wait to see the show at the Ojai Art Center Theater. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us. The little things, the little things, the little things, the little things lie together,
that makes perfect relationships. It's harder than a matter of personal goal. It's harder to get you up with your rump. Single